Welcome, everybody, to the second episode of What'd You Think? This show, we are going to do the Lone Ranger, or at least talk about the Lone Ranger, which all of us have recently seen. With me today, I've got my husband, Cole Houston, and David Petty of the 501st.
Hello.
And we are going to discuss having recently seen the Lone Ranger. The reason I thought David would be a perfect guest for this particular show is when I was perusing Facebook trying to decide whether or not I wanted to see this film, and trying desperately in the course of it all to avoid spoilers, which of course, as you know, this show is full of. I ran across this fantastic paragraph or two about the total movie experience and his recent experience with Lone Ranger. So David, if you could just share a little bit of that with us, that was just phenomenal.
Well, first off, the whole reason why I wrote it was because I saw Superman, Man of Steel. And I thought Man of Steel was as good as Avengers. I had a blast. It took my breath away. And I couldn't believe the negative reviews it was getting from people in the geek world. I mean, it was just getting lambasted from people saying it was terrible. And then we go see Lone Rangers. And, once again, I had fun. It wasn't what people were complaining about. In fact, it really wasn't even what the advertising was, advertising. It wasn't what I thought it was going to be at all. There were times where I wouldn't say emotional, but teary, because I was laughing so hard. And the thing that really kind of made me mad was, we're going to see it the opening night, and it was empty. It was an empty screening. I was completely shocked. And the only people that were there, and no offense to anybody listening, the only people that were there were people that were my parents' age. People in their 50s and 60s that were going because they remembered the TV show. And I was just really kind of disappointed. I felt like being geeks, we need to be responsible, we don't realize how, because of the internet, we need to be responsible with our points of view, because Hollywood or the movie industry, they're paying attention to what we're saying. They totally are. And we say something negative, thinking that we're being smart, thinking that we're being awesome or whatever. We might not even be realizing what we're saying. We're just trying to sound intelligent. And it totally affects the outcome of the future of something that we really love, i.e. Star Wars.
That's a fantastic point, because, as you said, by just seeing the previews, plus there's so many people in fandom who have an opinion about a particular actor, in this case, Depp, that already they've decided how this is going to land just by who's in it, and not even appreciating the story or how it's written or how it's realized. One thing, I kind of was intrigued by it because it had Johnny Depp in it, and I thought, what an unusual choice for an American Indian character. As who I see as a fan is Pirate Jack.
Well, also I think this suffered heavily from what I would call Michael Keaton syndrome. Of course, when Michael Keaton took on the role of Batman all those years ago, we didn't have the internet, at least not in its ubiquitous form as we have it today. But even then, just around the your circle of friends or things you would read here and there, everybody was sure that, Mr. Mom is Batman. What?
Oh, no. What about the Joker? With Heath Ledger. I mean, at the time I lived in California when they announced he was going to play the Joker. And, everybody was just associating him with Brokeback Mountain.
Exactly.
And every time they mentioned Heath Ledger's name, they would play a recording of somebody saying sausage, just like that. And I'll be honest with you, being crude, it was funny, but after a while, it's like, okay, whatever. But at the same time, it's created this thing of, he can't play the Joker. What are we talking about?
Right.
Nobody can play the Joker. Oops.
Yeah, and you forget that they're actors, and if they're good actors, they're versatile, and they can put on different faces, literally. Another thing that you pointed out that I thought was interesting was there's... The internet has created a generation chasm, not just a gap. And I think that there are a lot of market people and stuff like that that take a certain generation's comments on the internet as far too seriously.
Oh, well, we take everything we say far too seriously. I mean,
yeah,
the thing I wrote that the person that I really respect or somebody I really look up to said that when you're critical of something, you sound smart. That person was my wife. I didn't want to throw her out, but she pointed out that it's actually a study that proves that people think they sound intelligent when they are critical or complain about something.
I agree with her. She's on point because, you know, you get people who are posing and they don't have anything valid to say. So they criticize. So it makes it look like they're all-knowing. So I see what you're saying.
But also, one of the things you run into nowadays is the internet has made everyone a film critic or everyone a television critic or a food critic or, you know, what have you, without realizing that the people who do that professionally do that because they have a knowledge that backs up what they're saying. It's not just personal opinion. And the other thing is that, in my experience, people tend to look at the word critique and the word critical as being interchangeable, and they're not.
Well, it's interesting that you say this because I'm noticing, I want to say the word dichotomy, but I just graduated from community college, so I don't know if I'm using the word right. But I'm a big NASCAR fan, and I know you're probably like, wait, that doesn't make any sense. Why are we talking about that? It's the fact there's a story a guy wrote who was an actual reporter. He went to school as a journalist. He knows how to report on things. And he noticed that the way NASCAR is doing things, they're having a shortage of actual reporters. What's going on is they're getting an influx of bloggers. That because you can write about something, all of a sudden you must know so much about whatever. And they don't have actual reporters. And I'm noticing that even with this. I mean, I read the reviews before I went to go see the movie. I actually didn't want to go see the movie. I went to go see the movie because it was 4th of July weekend, and I wanted to go see a Western. I was just like, eh, whatever. I'm beginning to wonder if that's what's going on as well. I mean, just in the news world, I mean, we can complain all we want, but I went to community college in Long Beach. I want to be a broadcaster. I don't want to be a broadcaster anymore because it's all about talking heads. They don't, what's the word I'm trying to think of? I have a better chance of making it in Hollywood than I do being a broadcaster because I'm not a beautiful blonde woman with big breasts.
You know, that's the same reason I can't use my broadcasting degree.
And I can't help but think that's what's going on right now also in the movie industry when it comes to watching a movie and critiquing it and writing. I mean, to actually talk about The Lone Ranger, I thought it was incredibly brave that they use the original William Tell overture for the main theme. That actually is what got me teary-eyed, and it made the movie that much more enjoyable. I remember when they first played it right at the beginning of the movie, I looked at Camille and I said, "Well, I'm so glad they put that one little snippet in. It's too bad they don't use it for the rest of the movie." Wow, what a shock.
A payoff at the end. It's like, okay, here's something for fanboy.
Well, actually, that was really the point where what that music did, to bring that back that late into the film, because of the fact that it is so exposition heavy, once you have that return of the William Tell overture, it is effectively through music saying, the Lone Ranger has arrived. This man is no longer the lawyer. He's no longer Jimmy Stewart coming out to shoot Liberty Valens. He's the Lone Ranger. The legend has begun.
You cross the finish line,
exactly. And that music says, okay, now we're here.
But they did some other things, too, I thought was brave, was the hero, the main guy, who is not Johnny Depp. I'm terrible with names. If you guys know the name of the actor, I don't. I just know him now as the Lone Ranger.
I don't have him on the tip of my tongue. We'll
his name
call him
is Army Hammer.
There it is.
But I have no idea where he's from or anything. Which, in a way, that is kind of like Christopher Reeve when he took on the Superman role in the 70s. Out of nowhere.
This guy was great, but the thing that really impressed me about the movie was the fact that every hero nowadays, especially in Hollywood, has to have an edge to them. Superman, once again, is a perfect example. I mean, they got to have some type of dark tie to them. It's got to be something where they're emotional or, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Well, with comic superheroes, they're pretty much always orphans, so they got they got issues.
Yeah, and while at the same time, the Lone Ranger in the movie, there's something bad and dark that happened. This character was lighthearted, he was funny, he was very innocent, which I thought was really important, because it was, like you said, there's a generational chasm.
Yes.
They really tried to connect, and I thought they
really
took some risks.
He was a good guy. He was the classic definition of a good guy.
He didn't even shoot, for crying out loud, which was really amazing.
Yeah, and it also sort of allowed you to introduce the, for the future, and ideally this will become a franchise, because I would go see another.
Oh, it better.
It introduced the idea, the classic. I mean, I remember watching Lone Ranger on TV as a kid, and whenever he pulled his pistol and fired it, it was to shoot a gun out of somebody's hand.
Right.
And you actually got the classic shooting the gun out of the guy's hand. Albeit seemingly by accident, but you can kind of look at that as for the future, the genesis of just disarming guys.
And that's what in classic Westerns, good guys did. They didn't kill. They saved. They stopped the bad guy, but they didn't. They weren't gangsters. They weren't murderers.
And they weren't out for vengeance. They were out.
Yes.
And he says it repeatedly. He's out for justice.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Tonto's concept of justice is a little bit more final, a little less tied down to the laws of the land or anything like that.
And also, I think they did a fantastic job of how do you approach a cowboy and Indian Western in today's very sensitive society? Because, you know, at the end of the day, yes, the Indians' land was stolen from them, and that's totally shitty, and you don't want to turn your back on that because it's true. Well, but how also do you embrace that cowboys and Indians classic genre while still respecting that fact? And to be honest, I think the movie did a very good job of that balance. What do you think?
Well, the funny thing is that the movie, you know, you're right. Society nowadays is incredibly, incredibly sensitive. In my opinion, way too sensitive, but that's another thing altogether. But this character, the Lone Ranger itself, is what society needs, or is at least calling for. I mean, do you know why he used silver bullets in the TV show?
Because he had a silver mine, didn't he? Wasn't he a wealthy man?
Well, the writers said we need to make him silver bullets to show that life has a value.
Oh, okay.
Because you're not going to shoot everybody you run into if they're using
if you're having
bullets.
To weigh silver.
Right.
I didn't know that. That is awesome. I did not
also
know that.
Also, the fact he doesn't chew tobacco, the thing about he doesn't shoot people left and right. The Indians during the TV show were not bad people, but they weren't good people. They were just people. They were trying to be equal with everybody.
Right.
And they did that with the movie. The thing that kind of got to me, though, was what people were being so critical about in the movie was it was almost like they were just throwing things out like, well, yeah, of course they'd have Johnny Depp as Tonto. They couldn't pick a real American Indian. He's half American Indian, isn't he? You can't get more American Indian nowadays.
I don't know. I honestly, truth to tell, I don't know whether or not he is,
well,
but I think he portrayed the role wonderfully. I absolutely adored the character.
But and the other thing was they said, oh, he was trying to act too much like Jack Sparrow, and he wasn't. If anything, there were times where I thought he sounded like his character from Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people, they looked at the costume elements. It's fairly clear if the same costumers weren't involved or the same production designers weren't involved from the Pirate series, they were certainly channeling that. There are a lot of elements, like just little bits and pieces to little flourishes, like the rattlesnake tail and the Butch Cavendish's hair. That, you know, really invoked pirates. So, you know, the Johnny Depp imagery was all over the place for months. So immediately everybody's like, oh, it's Wild West Jack Sparrow. Without benefit of anything other than photographs and a handful of clips. So I think a lot of people just went in with that attitude and couldn't let it go.
Well, the other thing I read was that, you know, they gave away that Butch Cavendish ate his victims' hearts. And he said, how is that a family movie? But they didn't show him eat anybody's heart. It was more implied. And
you want to see somebody eating somebody's heart, go watch Daniel Day-Lewis and Last of the Mohicans.
Or what about Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, for crying out loud.
Yeah, I agree with you, David, that was very, that was as tastefully done as heart eating could ever be.
Yeah, that was the most tasteful heart eating scene I have ever seen.
Well, and the thing about it is that it really is, I mean, the violence was there, but it harkens back to the method in which violence was once depicted, where it was more implicit. One of the things I liked was the production design of the squibs. Whenever somebody got shot, it had this sort of like dusty, it actually made it feel more Wild West, but it seemed like anytime somebody got shot, this big puff of dust was coming off their shoulder.
And, everyone was dusty. It was the West.
Contrast that with Django Unchained, where
Texas is dusty.
Yeah, you get shot, it leaves a clean spot.
But I thought it was very well done because the violence was more implicit than. They didn't feel like you had to show people's heads falling apart.
Right, and also talking about the chasm, I've got from my dad was born in 1925, and I have some of his toy guns that he enjoyed playing with growing up. They're cap guns, little metal cap guns, just like the little kid has in the movie. So that's the kind of toys kids used to get to play with before we got scared of everything.
Yeah, the evolution effect. It's the opposite of evolution effect. Right?
Yeah.
Something stupid and we got to like soften the wall or whatever. I hate that.
The way the story was told, and Cole and I were talking about this, is I found a Princess Bride flavor to it. Where you have a storyteller telling a story that's obviously a fantasy. Mm-hmm. And so when you have an eccentric storyteller telling a fantasy, it's allowable to stop and skip ahead or have the child call shenanigans on something that they're saying. And so that start and stop and okay, this is how it really happened thing, I enjoyed because of that. What did you think about that?
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that. Because one of my big complaints of Hollywood nowadays is not the CGI, but the fact that CGI has made everybody lazy.
Yeah.
The last time I got excited about a movie, once again, was another surprise, which was Judge Dredd, because they were harkening back to like the 1980, 1990 action flicks, but was like, well, how do we show this way? So let's put a camera on a gun and just do different angles. They did that with this. They were very creative.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't just say, okay, we're going to use CGI for everything. And you watch the movie, and I don't know, I guess with Princess Bride, because he's opening up the book, you accept certain things that, okay,
yes.
this is just a fantasy or whatever. But
That's why the horse being in the tree, that's okay. Because
it's story. You don't know what Tano's lying about and what Tano's not lying about.
Exactly.
You don't know what Tano's...
Exactly.
Skewed perception of reality and what's real.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
And so we don't even know if he really is what is it, the Death Walker or whatever?
The Spirit Walker. Yeah, because you get the idea Tonto's still not 100% that they got the right guy.
Right.
No matter
I love
how much he is
evolved. Wasabi, wrong brother.
Yeah, that was brilliant, too.
That was such a great touch, you know, and Like I said, I just think, I don't think it was given its proper chance, you know? I mean, the thing that I loved about it, too, was, and this is how I know if a movie's good, if my wife and I are still talking about it as we're going to bed.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly, that's a...
And we were just talking about it, like, left and right, and the thing I loved about it was, like, the horse up in the tree made it acceptable for the Lone Ranger to be riding the horse on the train.
Yeah.
And through the train.
Yeah.
You know, of course, that horse isn't right, and nature is not... right in balance right now.
Yeah, and that was one of the
things.
And
how about the
that,
carnivorous rabbits?
Yeah, the carnivorous rabbits helped that, the scene with the scorpions. There were a lot of things that establish that either this is not a proper horse, or, like they're saying, nature's out of balance, so things that shouldn't be happening are happening.
I'll be honest with you, and I don't know if I keep repeating myself, but when I watched the movie, I just saw a lot of bravery in the way that they made the movie. They didn't make it in the sense of, how do we make everyone happy? It was, well, how do we make ourselves happy? I want to do this, and I want to do that.
Absolutely.
You know, you gotta admire that when you go to a film. And like I said in what I wrote, we don't look at that anymore when we go see a movie. We just go see it because we try to catch every little problem.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that you brought up very well, it almost seems like nowadays people are going to movies with their Facebook or the blog or what have you. They've got their review already. They're starting to write it in their head.
Yeah.
Because nowadays everyone fancies themselves a writer because we've elevated. I remember watching the news story, you know, I think it was like during one of the elections or something. And one of the 24-hour news cycle channels actually started to invoke what they were finding on the so-called blogosphere. And I think, okay, this isn't news. Any hack who has a Google account can blog. That doesn't make them a journalist. It doesn't make them an educated critic of the political scene or any scene. So, you know, we've got to the point where we've elevated just anything anybody says to gospel.
And we go to validate our own opinion versus to enjoy the show itself.
Yeah, but the thing that's really getting scary, guys, this is the part that... It's really scary, is that we're taking these movies, and, you know, lately we've been getting a lot of reboots, but we're holding these reboots, which have been pretty damn good, and we're comparing them to the movies from the 80s going, they're not as good. You know? You mean to tell me you're going to compare Man of Steel to Superman 2? What? I mean, don't get me wrong, Christopher Reeve.
Or worse yet, Superman 3.
Actor. What?
Or worse yet, Superman 3.
I know, I mean... That's the thing that's driving me crazy that I can't stand anymore is, like, you know, we're getting mad that, Michael Bay wants to make the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles aliens. Well, dude, they were almost alien-like in the movie back in the 80s. It wasn't that good of a movie, but it was fun.
Exactly.
Well, you know, I understand that we're adults and we've kind of lost our childhood innocence, but, you know, sometimes you just got to pick up the Lego blocks and get... Okay, we're having fun, guys.
Yeah, exactly. It's obvious, of course, we all enjoyed the movie, but we do have a go-around to see, were there any one point in the movie that if you were making it, you wouldn't have put in? It doesn't necessarily have to be horribly negative, but something that maybe slowed down the action or wasn't the same flavor as the rest of the film that you personally would have had in there.
There was a part, I can't really put my finger on it, but there was some slow parts in the movie that where it was, they didn't need to have certain things go on. Does that make sense?
Yes.
I don't even know where to pinpoint it. And there were parts where I literally picked up my phone and started checking the Ranger score. Or there were parts where I didn't mind going to the bathroom. But I think it was the campfire scene where they were just basically chit-chatting. You know, there wasn't anything going on.
Yeah, that was a key break.
Lone Ranger action. I wanted to see that. I wanted to hear the William Tell Overture more, you know. I wanted to see more banter between Tonto and the Lone Ranger because I thought, actually, the banter was brilliant. I love the fact that they were mad at each other.
Yes.
You know, the ending where he says, "Hi-ho, Silver, away," and Tonto's saying, "Don't ever do that again."
That was brilliant.
Come on. If you don't like that, you're not human. And you should not be going to see movies at all.
Well, those were the people who were next door watching Despicable Me 2. Not to impugn that. We finally saw the first one. It was a lot of fun. But which brings another thing is, like, when World War Z came out, and again with this, or you're seeing a lot of things where, like, World War Z came out the same weekend as Monsters University. And then, and again with this and Despicable Me 2, and you're seeing this, like, you know, World War Z knocked out of top spot. Any of these reviews that are just so haughty about it. Like, what do you think? It's the one movie you can guaranteed take kids to go see is Monsters University.
Mm-hmm.
And on the opening weekend, is anyone with kids doing? They're going to see Monsters University because the kids have seen the commercials or the trailers. Does that make Monsters University a better film? And that's the other thing, is we tend to look at like, well, that's not a very good film. It didn't make $1 billion in 1 week.
Well, look at other movies that weren't big, but now they're popular. Austin Powers.
Oh, yeah.
You know, ironically enough, Despicable Me, when it first came out, it wasn't that great. It was when it came out on video. The same thing with Anchorman. You know, you can market that a lot easier. You can also take a lot more risks and do a bunch of more fun things with cartoons. I think people go see a cartoon and they know exactly what to expect.
Yeah.
Versus, I mean, granted, there were parts of Toy Story 3 where I was kind of taken back. Like, whoa, is Toy Story 7 to death? But you go see a live-action movie nowadays, I think we're getting bored with it. To get on to another thing, too, The Lone Ranger, its failure might not have also been critics and stuff like that. I'm wondering if maybe we're getting tired of Westerns, or that if it's just that it's not translating well nowadays.
I don't think that people really, well, okay, to rephrase this, I don't think under 40-year-old people really relate to Westerns at all. And so they're probably very intrigued by the Lone Ranger. And if they're part of fandom, they've maybe seen Lone Ranger before. But not everybody that of that generation is part of fandom.
Well, I was thinking of Cowboys and Aliens because there was a lot of hype about it. I was really excited.
Mm-hmm.
But it just didn't translate well, in my opinion. It wasn't like, oh, I wasn't blown away. As a matter of fact, I had more fun with Lone Ranger than I did with the Cowboys and Aliens. And if I had a choice, I'd pick Lone Ranger again.
Well, I thought Lone Ranger was phenomenal. I was glad. I was kind of bracing myself and breathed a sigh of relief because I thought, okay, Western plus railroad, please don't tie her up and put her on the railroad tracks. Please don't do that. Don't do that. Please. No, 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 no.
You know what I loved about the movie was that in this day and age with the whole gun scare going on, Tano gave a bullet to two different boys.
Yes, exactly.
It's like, oh, but the thing that's interesting, and once again, I don't know if this was a political view, but it was a brilliant one, was that he didn't give the bullet to incite violence. It was to incite responsibility.
Exactly. Very well said.
And I thought maybe, you know, I think maybe we need to take a page out of that movie and go, yeah, I think we need to bring back some of these things and bring back some of these ideals.
I agree completely. What was, do you have a maybe one scene that you'd like to mention that is maybe one of your favorites in the whole thing?
My the part where they bring in the William Tell Overture and they start, you know, the main fight scene that one critic said was too long and too old. BS.
Aww.
Bovine skatos, as my science teacher would say. It was not too old. It was fun. If you like movies, if you like television, if you like the silver screen of Hollywood, you have this greater, deeper appreciation, you know, for what you're watching. But it was just, it was fun. And I can't believe somebody would actually complain about that.
Oh, that was a great part. Cole, do you have a part that you thought really stood out?
The thing about it is, one, I don't know if this really qualifies there, but I think early on it, you know, with Depp getting top billing and, you know, early in the movie, you're beginning to see this is not really so much the Lone Ranger as Tonto and the Lone Ranger. But the thing about it is, as the story progresses, it begins to make more sense. Plus, it finally moved the character of Tonto out of the realm of being the guy the Lone Ranger sends into town to get beat up. You know, Tonto was always his, you know, faithful, fearless companion, always there for him, his right arm in the television show, but he was always still, there was just that edge of being kind of like, yeah, you know, I am the Lone Ranger after all. But, you know, to elevate the character to a new level. But one of the things that really, I think, stuck out with me was the characterization of Tonto's tribe, who, you know, were long suffering, but they didn't feel like they had to portray them as this, just this bitter, angry people who were going to lash out at the white man that they had in their custody.
Yeah.
And I think that the characters there were portrayed with, you know, absolute respect. And like you're saying, they're portrayed as people, not as good guys or bad guys.
Yeah, and they also had a sense of humor. They thought the mask was just...
Yeah, the fact that there was humor there. Because one of the things we forget is that laughter and humor are universal. And a lot of times when you see a depiction of, you know, quote-unquote... uncivilized, or, you know, by European standard classifications of quote-unquote savages, that from the most advanced to the least advanced civilizations the Earth has ever known, there's always humor. There's always something to laugh at.
Yeah. You know, the other thing, too, is watch The Lone Ranger, the first episode on YouTube, and you'll never be able to look at Silver or Tonto the same way again. You won't. And that's the other thing I thought was brilliant, was the fact that they... it incorporated the horse as a character itself rather than just the faithful steed.
Yes.
That was brilliant. And I love the fact, I swear to God, they were on something when they did this. The story was about Silver, but it wasn't about the horse.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
So if somebody was to ask you, what's the movie about? And you say, well, it was about Silver. Is it, it's about the horse? Well, no. Well, I just thought that was a neat... They you could tell they had fun when they made this movie, and I think that's what made the movie fun.
Yes.
Yeah, plus
I agree.
The one bad guy, you know, the character Cole, the railroad baron there, I did like the irony of his death, is being buried in the very thing that was supposed to make him, you know, a king, as it were.
Yeah, and I don't know if you guys know this. I mean, you probably do, but you know that Butch Cavendish was one of the main bad guys in
the
Lone Ranger.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In fact, I was telling Catherine on the way home that back in the 80s, there was a Lone Ranger film that is largely forgotten, the very late 70s, early 80s. That was, Butch Cavendish was the bad guy for that as well.
Well, I think Hollywood, eventually, they're going to realize that you can't make geeks happy. You can make...
Because geeks like to bitch.
Yes.
That's what geeks
in fact,
do.
That should probably be our new name is bitch. Bitches.
Bitching, yeah. Bitching about movies.
You just can't. I mean, the Simpsons episode, was the Simpsons characterization of the comic book guy, that's us to a T. And I'm using us in general because we need to take responsibility, all of us, about what we say.
Right, right.
You know, worst movie ever. What? Shut up. You know?
Yeah, that's the point where you have to be like Napoleon Dynamite, as if anyone could know that.
we are whiny butts.
I mean, the perfect example of that is when I first met my wife. We met at Dragon Con. I don't know if anybody knows that here, but our first date was the last day at Dragon Con. And we went down to the Hilton, I think, or the Sheraton on the bottom floor, and we just sat and talked. And what I did was, I was in a zombie costume, and I changed out of my zombie costume, and I was basically just in regular clothes, but with makeup and blood. My wife was still in her Wonder Woman costume. So as we're talking, this guy comes up, and he asks, excuse me, miss, can I take a picture of you? And so she says, yeah. And I jokingly, sarcastically, lightheartedly said, what, you don't want to take a picture of me? And he took me seriously and said, no. Oh, that is the worst costume I've ever seen.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, and that's a perfect example of the fact that we as geeks need to stop taking everything so seriously. We as geeks need to be more playful with what we do.
Right.
I still play with Legos, and Legos remind me, hey, dude, life's too short, and damn it, so am I.
Well, I'm telling you, you guys have to come over sometime. We will all have dinner. We will watch something fun on video, and I've got a massive tub of Legos we will do something serious with.
You know, I guess I just want to say one more thing. This is all connected. You know, I hate to sound like a Jedi or whatever, but it really is. George Lucas and Steven Spielberg went out and said that Hollywood industry is going to collapse in on itself soon.
Yeah.
And I agree with them. And I talked to a few guys that were in Hollywood, the Hollywood industry, and or the movie industry, and I asked them, why are we getting repeats of things? Why is it that we can't get an original film like Back to the Future? Why is everything either based off a book, a comic book, or a toy line? It's because Hollywood does not want to make risks anymore.
Right.
They know that even if the Smurfs is a collapse, they're going to get some money. They're guaranteed to get money.
Yeah, there's going to be some kind of bank.
Right.
On that.
And we're not helping that. We're not helping that when George Lucas comes out with 1, 2, and 3. And yeah, it wasn't spectacular, but it wasn't as bad as everybody has shown. It really wasn't as bad. And I have this argument with people that complain about 1, 2, and 3. I say, okay, would you rather watch 1, 2, and 3, or would you rather watch the Twilight series? And it shuts them up. Because, I don't want to watch the Twilight series. Okay, then episode 1, 2, and 3 wasn't as bad as you were talking about. Shut the fuck up. You know,
we're running a little low on time.
Okay,
so,
sorry.
So that's quite all right.
I got more complaining to do.
This has absolutely been awesome. Before we're done, I could kind of guess, but how many stars out of 5 would you give Lone Ranger, and what would be the one brief thing you'd say to somebody who wanted to go see it?
I would give it a 3.5, maybe 4, because it wasn't a perfect film, like I've persistently said. But I would say, go get yourself a bag of popcorn, soda, and some milk duds, and go enjoy the movie, and enjoy the movie for what it is. Do not put on your thinking caps. Don't. Take your thinking cap off.
Excellent. Cole, what would you say and how many stars?
I would probably give it about 4 stars tops, maybe 3.5, because, you know, like you say, it's not a perfect film, and I think my sole complaint really would be that it was just excessive exposition. It took the whole movie to get to the point where you, or what a lot of films sometimes do in the first act. Like the entire film was a first act.
Mm.
But in a way it worked. You know, somehow they got away with it. But it's not exactly the best approach to that kind of story craft.
Right.
I would give it 4 stars. I enjoyed it. Like David, I would say this is a no-brainer entertainer. Kick back and have some fun with it. Just enjoy it as a story. I would also say that this is a fantastic reintroduction to a classic character for the modern times.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they did a great job along those lines. David, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate having you. Is there anything that you're involved in that you'd like to promote or point anybody in any particular direction?
No, the 501st, we're always doing stuff. So if you see us, come out and say hi, because we literally are doing something every week.
Well, that sounds awesome. And, of course, Cole has all sorts of different programming here on the Jedi Cole universe at JediCole.com.
And you can find Catherine and I a lot of times on over at the United States of Geekdom at UnitedStatesOfGeekdom.com, of course.
Okay. I'll listen.
Well, thanks, you guys. And this is Catherine Houston. This is Jedi Cole. Thanks for joining us. Go to the movie and have some fun.